Hello and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. We're going to have a lot of fun on our show talking about balancing soil fertility. And I'm going to assume, as soon as you hear that, you go, oh my goodness, that sounds complicated, or maybe boring. But I'll tell you this, when you balance your soil fertility, what you're going to find is better soil life, better soil health, better crops, and ultimately, in most cases, you're going to find better yields and better profitability. Plus, we're going to try to make it as simple as possible for you today, just talking about balancing soil fertility. If you've got any questions for us, or if you just want to call in to talk about anything going on in your farm, we'd love to take your phone call all throughout the show. It's 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. You can email us, radio@agphd.com, or find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Darren Hefty, or Brian Hefty. We are live in the Morton studio today. Next week, on Wednesday, we're going to be hosting a collegiate agronomy workshop in Watertown, South Dakota. We are going to be giving away a few college scholarships at that event. And even if you're not in college, we'd love to have you attend. We go through a lot of really good information, even on our topic today, soil fertility. We're going to talk about reading soil tests, how to do that, how to make recommendations. We'll talk a little about drain tile, controlling weeds, insects, diseases. So got a lot of things to cover at the Collegiate Agronomy Workshop that we're hosting next week. Again, just go to agphd.com to learn more. All right, so as soon as we start talking balancing soil fertility, the first thing that I would encourage you to look at on the soil test is what's called the base saturation test. And what it is it's five different bases, five different elements, and the ratio of each one to the other. So basically, it's 100%. The total is always going to be 100%, but it is looking at the comparison of calcium to magnesium to sodium to hydrogen to potassium. And the biggest components of your soil, and I realize, you know, when we start talking soil fertility, we talk about N, P, and K a lot, but the biggest components of your soil in almost all cases are calcium and magnesium. And so we do talk about the balance of those two nutrients. And what we're typically looking for in this base saturation test is we'd like to see that number on calcium somewhere in the range of 65 to maybe 75 or 80%. And when your calcium level is that good, then that means you've got a more porous soil, more air can get down into that soil, you have better drainage. Our concern gets to be when your magnesium, especially in the upper Midwestern United States or in southern Canada, we get some really high magnesium levels from time to time. So we want to keep that magnesium to 20% or less. Now, I will say this. If you've got really heavy soil, we like seeing the magnesium down in that 12 to 14% range. If you've got very light soil, very sandy soil, let's call it a 5 CEC, we kind of like that magnesium level up 18 to 20%. I want you to think about it this way. Magnesium can tighten a loose or sandy soil. Calcium can loosen a tight soil. So the heavier your soil, the higher the percentage of calcium we would like and the lower percentage of magnesium we would like, just so you have good soil porosity and good drainage on the heavy soil side. And we want more magnesium to kind of tighten that sandy soil up so you actually can hold a little bit more in terms of nutrients, in terms of water. You'll just find that your soil will be a little bit more productive when you do that. So there's no exact thing. You don't have to hit some exact number here, but it's just to give you a general idea, again, about the basics of balancing soil fertility. Another really important concept here to understand, just in general, is if your pH is out of whack. So when we talk corn, soybeans, and wheat, the three predominant crops in the United States and also pretty important crops in parts of Canada as well, you look at what we really want for pH, and it's in the 6.3 to 6.8 range. That's kind of the ideal. That's where you can maximize yields and profits in most cases. Okay, so if your pH all of a sudden is 7.9, or if it's 5.1, something is obviously going wrong. And if you just simply get your nutrients better balanced in that soil, get your calcium where it needs to be, your magnesium where it needs to be, get your sodium where it needs to be, your potassium, you're going to find that pH is going to start to neutralize. So it will happen. Now, it may take a little bit of time, but it will happen over time. One of the things that we look at a lot is base saturation potassium. And the reason why we talk about that so much is because we deal predominantly with heavy soil. So a lot of our callers are from where we farm and north. So we're already in South Dakota, a long ways north of the United States, and we get a tremendous amount of calls about these heavy soils. And so we see this all across the northern United States and into Canada, where the soil is just really heavy. And you can have a lot of parts per million out in that soil, but because the soil has so much holding ability, so much holding capacity to hold all kinds of nutrients, the parts per million might look pretty good to somebody that's, let's say, in the southern United States with light soil. And you go, oh, I have 200 or 250 parts per million of potassium. And you know what? If you're in Mississippi or if you're in Georgia or, you know, some southern state with light soils, you're going to go, wow, I'd love to have 200 or 250 parts per million of potassium. But the problem is in a lot of these heavy soils, especially as we start coming north, we have a lot more heavy soils. Well, we're just not in ratio. We're not in balance. And what you're going to find in plant tissue analysis is you're going to be continually low if your base saturation potassium percentage is less than 4%. We really want that base saturation K level in the 4 to 8% range. And in some cases, it might cost a bunch of money to get you to that. But I would say this, if you've got very heavy soil, especially in the northern United States or southern Canada, the soil's cold, you don't get a lot of rainfall to begin with, the potassium isn't leaching out of your soil. So, I mean, that's the least of my concerns. My point is, you get your ratio right, you get your balance right, you get the amount right in the soil, it's going to stay there till your crop eventually uses it. So if you own the ground, it's no big deal, you're just putting the money out in advance, and eventually you're going to claim that back. But we're going to talk all throughout the show today about this base saturation test, about many other ratios you could take a look at in your soil to get your soil well balanced. So again, our topic today is balancing soil fertility. We'll talk more about that coming up today on Ag PhD Radio.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Want to cut production costs without losing yield? Brian Ryberg from Buffalo Lake, Minnesota has done just that. Here's his story.
We began using a soil warrior on our farm the fall of 2014. We've seen many benefits from better water infiltration, a lot less hours on equipment, fuel, able to reduce our fertilizer side. So it's really simplified our operation.
See what makes Soil Warrior different and better at soilwarrior.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Welcome back to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here along with my brother Darren. We're live in the Morton studio today. If you'd like to call into the show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. So each week we talk just a little bit about the grain markets. And next on the show, we've got Scott Harms with Grain PhD and Archer Financial Services. I was just going to mention before we get talking to Scott here that we had him and someone else from Grain PhD last week out to one of our Ag PhD workshops. We had tremendous attendance to those workshops. It was a lot of fun. But if you were not able to make it there and you're interested in what Scott and some of the people had to say, you can certainly go to grainphd.com and just request a copy of their presentation that they made last week, because they talked about setting a price floor for the 2020 corn crop and many other topics as well. All right, so Scott, thanks for joining me today. I want to talk to you first about these markets, especially in regards to China. I haven't seen any exports coming through yet. I thought we were going to have all these exports that were going on thanks to this China deal that got signed last month.
Yeah, good afternoon, Brian. It's been extremely frustrating. I think after the deal was signed, we've talked about this before, that we didn't necessarily need to see immediate sales. But if there was going to be a market reaction follow through, we were going to have to see those sales eventually. And we thought maybe before the Lunar New Year, that didn't happen. Then after the Lunar New Year, the trade deal kicks in as February 1st. So we've already flipped the calendar there, and we're 6 days in, and we still have not seen any sizable, tangible sales. So
now, Scott, you're sounding almost like a farmer there. We've waited 6 whole days. Yeah, nothing has happened yet. I know. I'm frustrated too. But I mean, honestly, it's been 6 days. So, I mean, what can we expect going forward? When would some of these things start to happen, do you think?
Right. Well, we do have a window here. And that's one of the things that's frustrating, and why we're anxious to get it, why the market's anxious and keeps pulling back, is because we have this window where we are, we're the best corn market. We're the cheapest corn in the world. We're not competing necessarily with South American new crop, although China is reaching out to South America for some supplies. So this is our window of opportunity, especially as it relates to wheat and corn. We know the soybean sales are probably going to be there eventually. But, that's the frustration. There was talk now today that China is going to cut their tariffs on U.S. products.
Yes.
Some 17,000 products. And it's not going to be significant. It's a little more significant in the meat area. They do really want that pork into China. So
right.
We saw the pork market close limit up here today, but it was a blip on the radar. It's not a major adjustment, but those will kick in. Those reduced tariffs will occur on February 15th, and so there's slight anticipation that it'll be February 15th when things kick in. What we'd really like to see is what we saw in December when they sent out offered the duty-free import licenses, and they took in something like 10 million metric tons of soybeans late last year. We need to see something. It would be nice to see something like that, where they just kind of clear it out and say, listen, we need a chunk of soybeans and we need them now. We want to put this toward this trade deal and that pack. But that is really what the market's waiting for, is, follow through from this trade deal and those sales. Just so far, they haven't shown up.
Yeah, but, as you talk about that, in a normal year, it just feels to me like we'd have a lot more need to get rid of our supply as quickly as possible, because we're sitting on a whole bunch of stuff. But let's face it, I mean, our production was way, way, way down last year compared to normal. I know there's going to be a new supply and demand report coming soon. What can we expect on that?
Yeah, there's a supply and demand report next week. If you'd asked me a few hours ago, I would have said that I expect that the trade deal will be impacted in that report, and it could see some, relatively aggressive export increases in next week's USDA report, which would tighten up the balance sheet a little bit and may provide some firmness to the trade. But there was a chief economist from the USDA that came out just a couple hours ago and said that they are really not going to take into account the trade deal to any large degree in next week's USDA report in affecting the export numbers. They are going to take it into a degree, but not to a major degree, because they don't know what the numbers are. They themselves don't know what the numbers are and what they will end up being, because they can get to this export quota from the U.S., this increase in export quota from the U.S., they can get to it at a lot of different ways. So they're not going to make a big leap. Now, I think in the soybean balance sheet especially, you're going to see an adjustment higher. And you may see, the corn side of our exports are running so slow relative to the previous year that they actually could cut exports next week in corn anywhere from 50 to 100 million bushel if they wanted to. So what you may see in corn is them not make that adjustment. So they may leave that unchanged where they could justify lowering it because of the trade deal. But there's another Outlook conference due February 21st, I think it is. It's the WASDE. It's more of a long-term play, a long-term look at the market. They look at several years and extrapolate forward, you know, what the balance sheets might look like, and that we may see a reflection at that. But don't look for any major adjustments to the export numbers based on the trade deal next Tuesday.
Well, that sounds about right. We sign an enormous trade deal. Oh, yep, this is all going to happen. And then the government itself doesn't even want to take that into account until it actually happens. So anyway, right. we'll see. Okay. So last week, as I mentioned earlier, you made a big presentation to a bunch of farmers that we had at one of our Ag PhD winter workshops. You were talking about using options and then dealing with cash sales and everything. I mean, there's a pretty detailed plan that you laid out, and we don't have time to get into all that today. But maybe if you wanted to give us a couple of highlights or just talk about some of the things that you are talking to farmers about right now, because there is a tremendous amount of grain that does still need to be marketed for this year.
Yeah, I think what we wanted to put out there was a price floor, and working with the people we work with at Grain PhD, and their interest level, you know, it was really about protecting their downside but leaving their upside open. So we wanted to have a strategy that fit that MO, and that's what we came up with. But it sets a price floor. I think it's important to note when you set a price floor, it's like buying an insurance product. You know, you still have to as far as pricing goes, you still have to do the cash pricing as the market moves higher. You just have this as a safety net in case things go wrong, just like an insurance policy. You really hope you don't have to use it, because you have to use it. Something went wrong in this case. Prices went lower. So I think it's important that getting this price floor out there at a manageable level, but you still have to have a plan to make your cash sales pricing decisions based on whatever it is, your basis levels or your cash flow needs. Or just price objectives. But, having a price floor in place like we laid out last week is just one step in the process. There's still more to do even once you get a price floor in place. But, you know, we thought we had a really good plan, and we were implementing that for the people we're working with. And again, like you say, if people are interested, they certainly can reach out. But there's more to it than just setting the price floor. That's purely a safety net. That's purely an insurance policy. But hopefully, if the market participates, we'll be able to get that in place here in the next 3 to 4 months.
Yeah, for Darren and me, we probably get more questions about grain marketing than almost anything else, or requests for help with grain marketing. I always tell people, look, I'm not the expert when it comes to grain marketing, and that's why we end up talking to Scott and the people at Grain PhD. So I guess I just encourage you, if you're listening today and you're looking for marketing help, just talk to these people. They are experts. We talk to them ourselves as well. Just go to grainphd.com. You can also give them a call at 844-GRAIN-01 and talk to them. So again, we've been discussing grain markets a little bit today with Scott Harms. He is with Archer Financial Services and Grain PhD. Scott, thanks for the time. Appreciate it.
Have a great day.
Yep, you too. Yeah, one of the things that for Darren and me, our dad always used to say is that the government's trying to steal our crop all the time. And so it was anytime there's going to be good news, he just felt like, well, that's going to get suppressed or whatever else, or it's going to come out after most people have already sold. And, you know, they often say that 2/3 of farmers sell in the bottom 1/3 of the market. So this whole grain marketing thing, it gets to be real challenging, especially when there's government involvement and you've got all these foreign countries involved and everything else. So again, we just encourage you, go to grainphd.com just for more general information. Learn more about options and doing some of these sales strategies that could hopefully help you on your farm. Well, stay tuned. We'll get back to soil fertility right after this.
Bean growers continue to see yield loss from white mold across the Midwest this season. To maximize next year's crop, a white mold prevention strategy that includes Contan's WG Soil Fungicide is a must for your farming operation. Applying Contans this fall to reduce the sclerotia in the soil is the most effective way to stop white mold at its source. Start a Contans white mold control strategy this fall or pay for it later in lost yield.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
Your grain bin fans can cost you a lot. High electric bills from running when conditions are not ideal, shrinkage from overdried grain, and spoiled grain all take money out of your pocket. With the Steps GMS app temperature humidity switch, get your bin fans to start making you money. Only run vans when the conditions are right. Eliminate shrink and spoilage in your bins. Deliver grain in top condition at market moisture. When every dollar counts, you need Steps GMS. Contact us today at stepsgms.com.
You know a healthy crop is required for your best results. Simply put, balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid fertilizers have the research, technology, and products to deliver those results. We also have an outstanding team of field agronomists ready to help you with your fertility decisions. AgriLiquid can help you maximize your yield potential effectively and economically. Visit agriliquid.com to find a dealer near you.
White mold and sudden death syndrome are two of the most important fungal diseases in soybean production today. But did you know 40 to 50 million acres in the north central region are affected annually? When every season has different disease challenges, the question becomes, how can you ensure the best start for your soybeans no matter what? The answer is Heads Up Seed Treatment. Trusted by growers across the Midwest, Heads Up offers a new mode of action to prime your beans to help fight fungal disease. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're broadcasting from the Morton Studio today and taking your calls and questions throughout the show. Our topic is balancing soil fertility, but of course, any agronomic question is certainly up for debate. Our phone lines are open again at 844-44-AG-PHD. Email radio at agphd.com. Just got a couple of chicken manure samples that came in. And you know what? We look at soil samples and manure samples and lime samples, and it really all adds up. And it can get a little bit complicated. We got our friend Bill Brush with us right now. He's an ag consultant out in California. Bill, when we talk about balancing fertility, it can be a little tricky when you're trying to look at all these different things that are going out in the fields.
Yeah, it truly is. I mean, our step out here in California, you know, we have everything from really fairly high moisture in terms of rainfall to almost desert-like conditions from one end of the valley to the other. And it really changes the way that you can balance soils, particularly when we're dealing with a ton of different water sources. So water really plays a big deal in getting our soils totally balanced. But, you know, when you're really looking at balancing soil, everybody wants to. The devil's always in the details, and it starts with, you know, our exchange capacity and what's hanging on that small little clay colloid. And as most people want, we want that high 60s of calcium on there and a low teens to down around 10% of that should be magnesium. And then we can really begin to do some balancing.
You know, you talk about that, setting the table with calcium and magnesium. And I want to get back into this water thing a little bit, too. We've got a lot of farmers, especially in the western Corn Belt, in some dry areas, dry land guys, and they're trying to get the jump on things oftentimes several years before they expect that to really be fully available. With irrigation and light soils, it changes the game. It's nice you can get stuff available quick, but you can also get things off kilter really quick too, can't you?
Well, yeah. You know, I've got some friends that are consultants and also been down in New Zealand where we don't talk about inches of rain. We talk about meters, somewhere 6 to 8 to almost even sometimes almost 10 feet of rainfall in a single year. And in the southern hemisphere like that, you can get acidity in that rain. So you start to push millions upon millions of gallons of water through your soil, and basically they're going to become acidic, and they're going to become acidic because it's going to strip calcium out. So you have to allow for that by, and sometimes actually overliming, actually putting more on than their soil recommendation would call for, to allow for that water to that we know is going to strip some of that out. So we've done that. And the other part of it we've also done is where we're using what I call poor quality water, which the term I use is it's heavily loaded, meaning it's full of bicarbonates, it's full of maybe even carbonates and other things that basically also tie up calcium. Sadly enough, you know, I work all my life or all my consulting life to get calcium right, and it seems like everything we do extracts calcium. Too pure rainfall, bicarbonates, excess nitrogen, all those are leach calcium, and the one key to our fertility that we try to get in balance to get that physical structure right.
Yeah, calcium is super, super important. And as we talk to growers more and more about this, guys are starting to get it. We're getting a lot more interest now. And all right, let's look at base saturation. Let's try and get that calcium and magnesium right. And oftentimes when we do, we find other things falling into place. Now, when we get things in balance, Bill, we've still got a lot of other nutrients out there that we're applying and crops are removing. And well, gosh, especially where you're at, you may have multiple crops in a season or multiple harvests in a season. Yeah. How do you do that in some of the permanent crops where you're going to get such big yields?
Yeah, well, one of the things I always look at it from, you know, the analogy is always perfect, is that when you have a crop that is removed from your field, and I grow almonds and I grow walnuts, and the shell and the nut and the hull all leave the field, and the nutrients, not just in the nut, but also in the other components that leave the ranch, need to be added back in. If not, you get like the bank account. You keep making withdrawals and there's never a deposit. Eventually you go bankrupt. And that's kind of what you do in your soil. And you need to basically be replenishing those nutrients you're taking out. There's a certain amount of mineralization you can get from some tied up nutrients, but overall you need to replace the ones you're taking out. There's a really good diagram of, if you look at, there's three components to basically to growing crops. To me, there's the physical, the chemical, and the biological. And if you drew three circles and kind of overlap them, there's a little bullseye that's where they all overlap. That's where we're trying to attain the maximum fertility. And at that point is where you bisect the physical structure, meaning you've got calcium, magnesium for good drainage and good aeration. That's where the biological section can thrive and flourish and mineralize and deliver those nutrients to the crop. And then the chemical, having all of the nutrients that you need. I always look at, you know, on my soils that I've studied, the classes and things I've taken, we look at we call them about 17, but there's really about 19 to 20 essential nutrients. But those essential nutrients are necessary for the biological function, they're necessary for the plant function, and they're necessary for our nutrition and other, you know, other animals and livestock. It's the same nutrients. Look at your multivitamin. What's
That's
in
right.
there? There's zinc, there's manganese, there's the whole raft that we need just as well as plants and the microbes.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And we look at even where we're growing corn in the Midwest, we're growing it to, in many cases, feed livestock. And the more nutrition we can pack in those kernels, the better the gains we see in the animals as well. You mentioned the biological component of this, and I think it's interesting. As we look at managing soil fertility, the biology in our soil really helps with availability. And a lot of times farmers will focus on soil pH, but really pH is just showing us we're out of balance, right?
Yeah, well, I always tell people, it's kind of an indicator. I've always said, I like to use analogies because they really drive home a point. pH is like the temperature gauge in your pickup truck. If you're going down the road and it gets too hot, you have a problem. But what is it? Is it your water pump? Is your fan belt off? You don't know what it is. You just know you have a problem. Well, if your pH gets too low, it always tells you you have too much hydrogen. So guess what? Something's missing from that balance of calcium magnesium. If you get up too high, you know you have too much of something because there's no hydrogen available. So you can then immediately go from that pH and look down at your base saturation and see what's missing or what I have too much of. And that's where I need to go to work. And too many times we look at pH of trying to get perfect. I've seen perfect pH and very poor soils in terms of balance and in terms of the ability to give the proper physical structure, which makes the biology flourish. That's essentially what that balance is headed for. And I've had some interesting conversations lately with a friend of mine from France that's talking about crops will literally take up more water trying to get nutrients that aren't available in the soil. So if you're short of one of the micronutrients and it's half of what it needs to be, it's going to try to pull more from that soil solution to build up additional nutrient that it can't get from just the normal. So you actually use more water, which in a drought year can be really, really valuable to have them taking up less water to be able to do the same function. It's really a fascinating study this guy's doing.
Yeah, there's so many things that go into getting soil fertility in balance, and then lots and lots of benefits. Like you just mentioned, crops become water wasters when they're short of even one of the essential nutrients. They keep drinking in more water, trying to get what they need to eat. Bill, thank you so much. Really appreciate it. We've been talking with Bill Brush, an ag consultant out in California. Good luck to you going into the spring.
Yeah, you too, guys. Look forward to seeing you soon, I hope.
You bet. Talking about balancing soil fertility on our show today. Also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
We know balanced crop nutrition pays. AgriLiquid has the research, technology, and products you need to grow a great crop, plus the expertise to give you a recommendation based on your soils, your fields, and your goals. AgriLiquid has the phosphorus, potassium, and micronutrient products necessary to deliver the best results from a solid fertility program. Visit AgriLiquid.com to find a dealer near you.
Every farmer knows that in order to be profitable, you need to maximize the return on your crop input investments. Hi, I'm Scott Harms, an agri-risk specialist with Grain PhD. Without an effective and flexible strategy, your grain marketing plan gets stuck in the mud. With Grain PhD, you get the clarity and guidance a solid marketing plan needs. Our free GrainBridge software simplifies your cost-profit analysis, and our risk specialists are here to help you develop your plan. Sign up today at GrainPhD.com.
The Grain Depth Guard from Farm Shop MFG has helped farmers keep their bushels safe from spoilage and shrinkage loss in bins all across the country. And this low-cost solution just became even more affordable. Farm Shop MFG is offering a $100 factory rebate on all Grain Depth Guard bin monitoring systems. This offer is available for a limited time only, so take advantage of this program now to upgrade your bins and protect your crop investments. For more information, visit farmshopmfg.com.
Now that harvest is in the books, it's time to start thinking about your plan for the next crop. Using a pre-emerge herbicide in your soybeans is the best agronomic choice you can make to ensure control of tough weeds and grasses before they wreck the rest of your season. Authority brand herbicides from FMC keep your soybean fields clean from the start. Research trials have shown that applying a pre-emerge herbicide at planting can preserve up to 20 bushels or more of yield potential. With multiple options to fit your soil types, tillage practices, and weed management needs, Authority brand herbicides deliver the pre-emerge power to fight glyphosate-resistant weeds before they take root. How do they do it? Two modes of action keep resistance in check. Rule your fields with dual modes of action. It's not too late. Visit your FMC retailer or fmcagus.com to learn more. Always read and follow label directions, restrictions, and precautions for use.
Talking about balancing soil fertility on today's Ag PhD radio program. Thanks for tuning in. Got another great guest right now. We've got Dan Peterson with AgriLiquid. He's based out of Wisconsin. Dan, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Happen to be in Michigan today as we speak.
Excellent. Yeah, I know you cover a pretty good area, and you get out and you see quite a bit. So you look at a lot of different soil types, Dan. What do you talk to growers about when it comes to getting things in balance?
It depends on what the soil conditions are and what, you know, basically what is it that they're dealing with. You know, for example, here in Iowa, Missouri, Minnesota, much of Wisconsin, Illinois, Michigan, for example, and points east, we deal with soils that tend to be acidic. And in soils like that, bringing nutrients into balance tends to be easier from a cost and management standpoint. Where you get out on the plains where you get pHs of 7.8, 8, 8.3, et cetera, bringing, you know, some nutrients into balance can be very challenging just because of that very high pH issue. It it just messes with a lot of different things, especially things like phosphorus.
Yeah, it is tricky, and we have some of each of those types of soil on our farm, so I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
You know, and it depends on why that pH is high too, because in our area there's some soils that are high because of sodium. There's some that are high because of magnesium. There are some that are high with just simply poor drainage. It's a lot of different things causing it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, you mentioned magnesium. Where you've got high magnesium soils that are also tend to be acidic, let's say take central Illinois, for example. There, the best thing that you can do is put on gypsum because the sulfate in the gypsum will grab some of that excess magnesium and leach that downward because magnesium is actually fairly mobile in the soil. And once you get that leach downward, now you free up cation sites, exchange sites for potassium availability, for example. So again, pH is paramount. You know, if I look at the soil, the first thing I look to is the pH, because then I know how to manage nutrients with what I've got there. And oftentimes, my first priority from a budget standpoint is fixing that pH. If you're down to 5.2, for example, there's no better money in the world that you can spend than on lime.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. You know, people talk about, well, what do I need to do first? And everybody gets excited about N, P, and K, and certainly you're going to have to feed this year's crop. But you're right. If you've got a pH at 5.2, there's a lot of things out in that soil that aren't going to be available. There's going to be a lot of stress on the crop because that pH is much lower than what most crops like corn and soybeans and wheat would really prefer to grow in. And if you're trying to grow something like alfalfa, you just don't have a shot at all if you've got a 5.2 pH.
Exactly right. And that's not good for soybean nodulation either. Corn, you know, maybe you can say corn, you can get by with that on corn. But even corn's going to do a lot better at 6.5 than it is at 5.2. So fixing pH, if that's within the realm of affordability, you know, from a management standpoint, that's number one for me. And then you mentioned sodium, and sometimes when you see a high sodium soil, one of the reasons is poor drainage. And oftentimes, you know, what I see is even in an area where maybe rainfall is only 12, 18 inches a year, it can still pay to put in tile drainage because that helps drain some of that sodium out of the soil. Yeah. Again, it kind of depends. If you're dealing with a very high clay content, yeah, maybe it might get a little expensive because you've got to space the lines too close. But painting with a broad brush, tiling gets overlooked in many cases, I think, as a management tool.
Totally agree with you, and I got to be really careful here, Dan. Otherwise, Brian's going to jump in, and the whole show will be gone talking about drainage. So just one last question I got for you. Let's say that we've got a soil that's way out of balance, and we get emails from growers all the time with soil tests, and they say, I know this is way out of balance. What would you do for this year's crop? And I look at banding nutrients, putting things that are safe to put either in furrow or in a 2x2. If we're close by that root system, even if we've got conditions like you were talking about earlier in some of these high pH situations where we've got a lot of tie-up, we can still deliver the needed nutrients and get good yields this year while we're trying to get things fixed.
Oh, absolutely. Just take potassium, for example. If you've got a soil that's marginal in potassium, it can induce a nitrogen deficiency. Likewise, if you are low on nitrogen and have a nitrogen deficiency, it can concurrently cause a potassium deficiency. So in a low potassium soil, and let's say you're a strip tiller, well, banding potassium, like you say, concentrated in a band is probably a very smart thing to do.
Yeah, I totally agree. I've been talking with Dan Peterson with AgriLiquid. Dan, thank you so much. We really appreciate every time we have you on here and hope to talk to you again soon.
Thank you much.
You know, Brian, Dan brought up a couple of good things there when it comes to drainage. If we've got a drainage issue out in the field, and I know, I'm risking it here to even talking drainage with you, we just can't fix some of these things like sodium. If you've got a sodium problem out in the field, unless you've got tile under there and enough tile under there, you're going to struggle getting that sodium out. And until you get that sodium out, you're just not going to get good water penetration in the soil. You're going to have a high pH, and your crop is going to struggle.
One of the things that's cracked me up just listening to a few people in our industry talk about how to fix those problems is, well, just put grass in there. I go, well, why don't I just turn it all back into native prairie and completely give up on my $5,000-$10,000 an acre ground? How about we do that? I mean, come on. That's not a solution. The solution is, yes, you got to get out there and put some tile in the ground. You can fix almost any soil problem if you just properly manage it. And then the question is, you know, what else do you need to add? And so we talk about managing sodic soils quite often. Well, the first thing is you got a soil test, and you got to find out, what do I have for a level of sodium to begin with? But also, what are my levels of calcium and what are my levels of sulfur? Because if I've got a crazy high amount of sulfur out there, which we often see in poor drainage situations, it's very possible that drainage improvement alone, putting tile on the ground, is going to fix your sodium problem. Now, it's not going to happen overnight if you got 8% sodium out there. But because you've got extra sulfur, and when that sulfur goes together with the sodium, that sodium sulfate, that's a salt, that's leachable. So just with normal rainfall, that will start flushing out of your system. So it'll take some time. But the whole thing is, when we start talking about sodium, it doesn't just happen overnight. I mean, it's not like yesterday you were raising 250 bushel corn, all of a sudden today you wake up and you go, huh, I can't raise anything on this ground, and it's got 8% sodium. Yeah, that's not the way it works. It happened over the last 20 years, maybe 40 years. I mean, this has been building for not just years, most likely decades. So this is why we really encourage you to pull soil tests on a regular basis and start identifying where you've got problems that are beginning to occur. So we just were looking at some soil tests yesterday where guys are like, okay, where a guy has 2% or 3% base saturation sodium. And it's like, hey, get this fixed now, because this is most likely only going to get worse. The higher that sodium percentage gets, the worse your crop gets. The worse your crop gets, the more the water's sitting there, and the more the sodium's going to be sitting there, and the worse your sodium gets, and then the worse your crop gets, and then the worse your sodium gets. You see where I'm going with this? And pretty soon, you've got completely dead soil. You can't obviously have that. I mean, there are solutions to all these things, and so we've been talking about it all throughout the show today. Balancing soil fertility is a real big key, and it kind of starts with things that we don't often talk about when we think fertility, because again, when we think fertility, we think NPK. Then we might think sulfur, and we may possibly think about the micronutrients, but we rarely use the words calcium and magnesium. But those are two of the biggest things that we've got to balance first. I guess the one other thing that I'll throw out there when we talk about balancing soil fertility is phosphorus and zinc. Roughly, we'd like to see about 10 parts per million phosphorus for every 1 part per million zinc. So if you've got 50, we want 5. If you've got 100, we want 10. That'll get you ballpark. Now, I don't know what the exact right number is. Maybe it's 8 to 1, 9 to 1, 10.5 to 1, but somewhere around there is pretty good. All right, we'll continue talking balancing soil fertility and get to your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag coming up next.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree. In the power lines!
Oh, it's heading for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit MortonBuildings.com.
Revitec fungicide from BASF has been specifically developed for the selective soybean grower who doesn't compromise. If you think good is good enough, if you're okay with just achieving rather than overachieving, if average is your goal, this is not the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide, brand new chemistry, 3 no-excuse modes of action, 0 modes of compromise. Sounds like the fungicide for you. Revitec fungicide from BASF, that's smart. Always read and follow label directions.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's Dual React Control System. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic herbicides from Atticus LLC. Tough broadleaf weeds are a hassle, but they're no match for Cavallo from Atticus. Cavallo delivers fast, contact, and residual control so your corn, soybean, and sorghum crops can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Thanks for listening today to Ag PhD Radio. Brian Hefty here, along with my brother Darren, broadcasting from the Morton Studio. If you'd like to call into the show, it's 844-44-AG-PHD. A couple last things before we get to the Ag PhD mailbag. I talked right at the open about base saturation tests. What we'd really like to see is your calcium level somewhere in that 65 to 75, maybe 80% range, magnesium in the 12 to 20% range. And when we're talking about balancing soil fertility, potassium is an enormous key as well, 4 to 8% base saturation potassium. Then you get to two of the minor nutrients, hydrogen. We want that 2 to 10% in a lot of cases. Now, I'm not going to say in all cases. But when you've got a little bit of hydrogen, that means we're slightly acidic. And for corn, soybeans, and wheat, we like it to be slightly acidic soil, so in the sixes. Then sodium, we'd like to see that less than 1%. I mentioned already phosphorus-zinc ratio is something we look at quite often. One other thing that we do look at is we want to have more iron available, more iron showing up in our soil test, than what we have for manganese. If the manganese level is above the iron level, then sometimes we do start running into some problems. So iron levels higher than the manganese. And then beyond that, you know, I would just say we want to have good levels of all the nutrients that our crops need. So N, P, and K, sulfur, zinc, manganese, iron, copper, boron, just even when it comes down to molybdenum, maybe cobalt. I mean, there are a number of different nutrients that your crop needs. We'd encourage you to check out the Ag PhD fertilizer removal app to see what your crop's going to use in a particular growing season based on your yield goal or your tonnage goal as well. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's now mailbag time with Brian and Darren.
First question comes from Pete in Rhode Island. He said, I've attached a couple chicken manure reports and some soil tests here. I have a grass hay operation. I did use chicken litter in field number 2 last March, had great results, but I'm concerned about overloading my ground. I've been doing multiple applications per year of a 30-0-18 blend at a couple hundred pounds per acre. I sent you some samples here. I'd also like to invest in lime for my fields. I've got some low pHs. I farm in southern Rhode Island, and the most cost-effective lime source is pelletized. I can get it either as magnesium-based or calcium-based, which looks to be the first choice here based on the soil tests. Love the show. Look forward to learning some more here today. Hey, thanks. Really appreciate that. He said he's growing an orchard grass Timothy mix.
Go ahead.
All right.
Is this what you emailed me?
Yes, I just emailed you here. that's okay. So, yeah, you can see we've got a soil test down here at the bottom. And he said, ignore that on the soil test. The last line is something unusual. He said that's not pertaining to any fields. But anyway, when you look at the fields, we've got some pretty good levels of phosphorus. That's one thing that just jumps out at me.
That's great.
Where our P1 phosphorus is over 100, and it's almost the same as the P2. In some cases, it's even over 200. So we got a lot of phosphorus, but our base saturation K is down in the 1 to 2%.
Yep, terrible. Yep, got to fix that. Also, I would say it's lighter soil. This is like 5, 6 CEC, so we'd like our magnesium to be up near 20, and some of it's down 5, 6, 7%. So you got to get some magnesium out there for sure. Now, the pH is a little bit on the low side. So the only question with lime in a lot of cases, I mean, we know we always want a fine grade of lime, but the only question is, do we want it high in magnesium or just high in calcium? The just high in calcium stuff, that's called calcitic lime. When it's also got a fair amount of magnesium, that's called dolomitic lime. But what we're looking for here would be dolomitic lime if we need to raise the pH. Okay, so we don't want to raise the pH much. He's got a couple spots that are fine. But where he is down in the fives, use some dolomitic lime there. That will help your magnesium. It'll help your calcium. It will help your pH. So that's all good. Coming back to that high phosphorus, I was just talking about the phosphorus to zinc ratio. Well, this is way out of whack. And here's one of the ways that you can prove this on your farm, too. You most likely, on your farm, have a yield monitor in your combine. Okay? You hopefully are doing grid point, or I should say GPS point, soil sampling. And what I mean by that is I don't care if you're running grids or zones. It doesn't matter to me. You do whatever you want to do. But you should have a GPS point in either your grid or your zone. And you should go to that point, and you should pull soil cores right around that point. Just drive your vehicle literally right to the point, step out of your vehicle, I don't care if it's a four-wheeler, pickup, whatever it is, and you take soil samples take soil cores right around the vehicle, done. Okay, now you can replicate that because you get a GPS point. And now here's the other great thing. You can correlate that spot to what your yield is. So we've done this on thousands of grid points on our farm, and that helps us fine-tune some of these ratio things. So, for example, the phosphorus zinc. We actually, in our farm, have overdone it in some cases because we knew we were short on zinc and we were high on phosphorus. So we started cutting back on phosphorus and we're like, okay, let's get the zinc out there. That's great. Problem is, we had a couple spreader issues and we have some spots now where we have crazy high zinc levels to the point where it's almost 1-to-1 or 2-to-1 phosphorus to zinc. Well, that's too much. And you can literally see it where we chart this out. And it's like, hey, we got to get that ratio closer to 8-to-1, maybe 10-to-1, something like that, phosphorus to zinc. But when you're down, and in this case, he's 50-to-1, I mean, it's going to be the opposite. So in other words, his yield's going to go down because his phosphorus is too high. So we want to keep those things a little bit in balance. The other things I'd mention, his manganese is low, his copper's low, his boron is really low. So, I mean, there are a number of things to work on here. But yeah, the first thing that we notice when we look at this test is we go, wow, those phosphorus levels are awesome. I wish I had that. But because everything else is so low, if he is to put on more phosphorus at all in those spots, added phosphorus is not going to help yield. Added phosphorus will hurt yield because it will prevent more of the other nutrients from getting into the plant and getting utilized.
Hey, thanks, Pete. Really appreciate the questions and look forward to seeing what you can do with that field here the next couple of years as you're farming it. Got a question here. This one's from Elias, and Elias is in Montana. I attended your soils clinic in January this year. I was impressed and learned a lot. We just bought a 300-acre pivot last spring, and we've got access to 30 inches of water from the Sun River, so we can hopefully do something with this. We plan to grow spring wheat, durum, planted some hemp on it last year, but that didn't work out very well for us due to an early snowfall. But I'm just wondering what you would do to fix things up on this 300-acre pivot.
Yep. So,
hey, Elias, first of all, thanks for coming to the soils clinic. And what I would say is make sure you work through this on your own without taking notes from Brian and me. I mean, you can take notes from Brian and me and set it off to the side, but then start looking through that test, working through it on your own, and then, of course, you'll have to figure out exactly how many pounds of different things you're going to have to do. But this is where you get the practice. This is where you get better at this thing by just working through the test from your own farm.
So whenever we do soils clinics, we talk about, all right, how do you read that soil test? Just step it through one step at a time, and it's really pretty easy. With his pH, it's way out of whack. His pH is up near 8. So one of our concerns, because you mentioned irrigation, right, Darren?
Yes.
Yep. When you mention irrigation, I worry a lot about what's the water quality there? If the water quality is not good, that actually could create more issues for us with soil pH. So I check the water quality. Okay, the next thing that I look at is we got major, major, major fertility needs here. So base saturation K is less than 1%. So I can promise you the potassium will be a fantastic investment. We've got phosphorus levels of 1 part per million. I can promise you that phosphorus would be a great investment.
Yeah, if you've got access to manure, that would be fantastic on that type of ground, correct?
Well, whatever. I don't care how you get it out there. Commercial fertilizer, manure, compost, wastewater, sludge, however you want to get it out there, I don't really care. Just get more nutrients out there because literally everything I'm looking at here is really, really low. Phosphorus is really low. Potassium is really low. Zinc's really low. Manganese is really low. Iron's really low. Copper's really low. Boron's really low. The only thing that's not really low is sulfur. So that tells me we've got a drainage issue. We most likely have a drainage issue out there. So if it's me and I own the ground, I'm tiling it. But I would just say you, in the meantime, want to do everything you can to raise a great crop out there. Start feeding the plant. You got very heavy soil, so that's where, like if it was row crop, we talked to guys about banding. If you're talking wheat, you just basically have to broadcast, but you've got to get more nutrients out there, and you'll absolutely see yield gain.
Thanks for the question, Elias. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.